Welcome everybody to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, the Lakers are now 2-0 in games where somebody courtside decides to talk trash to LeBron James.
Yeah, that's not the best idea, is it? That's
Do you think Elias Sports Bureau is going to start following the stat?
I mean, he's had a few of them throughout his career. It's got to be in double digits. Why do people do that? Although she told her side of the story we just saw.
Yeah, so it's up on my account, and then I've seen other people tweeting about it. So basically, Pete and I should give you guys background here. Today's show, we aren't going to spend our whole time. I could. I have so many questions about what went down courtside. For one thing, my first question is, why are people courtside? But the Lakers were, it was about fourth quarter, right? Midway through the fourth quarter. And there was some commotion courtside at the, on the sideline closest to the camera. And they wind up kicking the fan out. And this lady was screaming at LeBron. So after the fact, she hops on her social media and tells her side of the story. Apparently LeBron was talking trash to her husband. So I'm looking forward to finding out whose wife this was. And she then says that she told LeBron, she admitted to this. She told LeBron that if he didn't stop talking to her husband that way, she was going to kick his ass, which is certainly an approach. You know, it's one way to get your point across.
I'm sure LeBron was talking to her husband for no reason at all, right? There's nothing provoked there, right? Let's talk basketball, please.
All right, let's do that. Today's show, we are going to start with the reason why, this is one of my favorite wins of the season thus far. It's up there. You know, obviously beating the Celtics over the weekend was a lot of fun. But this one, this had the makings of the schedule losses, the schedule loss to end all schedule losses. Last game of the road trip, explosive offensive team, shots aren't quite falling the way that you might want to, and the referees were doing their Trae Young thing. So we're going to open up with that in this first segment. Second segment, we're going to talk about some new stuff that we saw from Anthony Davis, and a little bit more pep in his step, which I think is which would obviously be a huge development. And then finally, we spent a lot of time talking about, Caruso needing to play over Schroeder and Caruso needing to play more minutes in general and this and that and the other. I think I have gone about the approach to that conversation kind of incorrectly, right? I want to talk about why the things that he's doing to make the impact that he does, why it's so consistent. So that'll be the third segment. But yeah, let's talk about the win itself, Pete. Would you agree? It's up there, top two or three wins of the season thus far, in my opinion.
Really professional win, right? Especially how they got it. They weren't shooting the ball well. They made, I think, 1-3 in the first half, maybe 2. And they got that win on the defensive end, especially in that fourth quarter. I've also loved seeing the lineup change. We haven't talked about the lineup change that Vogel made in shortening to a 9-man rotation, THT in, Keefe and Wes out of the rotation for these last two games. And they were really good in that Boston game. They went on a big run to start the fourth. They went on a big run to start the fourth in this game as well. And that was a time of the game where that all forwards lineup was really hurting us. That was one of our worst, lineups.
Stretches.
That was one of our worst lineups in terms of productivity. So to get the win to make a lot of the progress toward a win during that stretch of the game is really productive. We weren't so good at the end of the first and third quarters, in the third quarter especially, but getting new structure, new lineups, and that we're starting to build in long-term senses as well. And I just loved how they defended, man. Like, they were, again, not shooting well, but gosh, we're going to talk about Caruso later, but our guards kick ass on the defensive end. They're so fun to watch.
Yeah, I really like the way, this was one of those games that as a guard, when the opposing guard is getting so many calls, it's really easy to kind of check out. And you'll even see it sometimes where, I forget who it was. Remember that there was a game a while back where they were so frustrated with the referee that they started playing defense with their hands behind their back. Do you remember that?
I don't remember the game, but I do remember that happening. Yeah.
It felt like that kind of game, right? That we might be heading in that direction there. And yet, you know, Caruso kind of fights through his foul trouble. Schroeder with some early foul trouble as well. He finishes with five fouls. Both guards finished with five fouls. I thought without completely turning themselves off to playing defense at all, they stayed as aggressive as they could and tried to impact it as best they could with the way that the game was being called. So, you know, it's just one of those games. Sometimes as a guard, you got to find that balance, and they did, you know, they did enough to impact it. And I thought, you know, for Schroeder in particular, given the way that he's kind of struggled and like this earlier on in the season could very well have turned into one of those kind of one-on-one games that Schroeder has, you know, where he takes it personal the way that Trey is playing out there or was playing out there. But I thought he stayed within himself. You know, I really liked the way that he played out there. And I think this is one of those situations where you're starting to see, you're starting to notice the growth as players become more comfortable with each other, understanding when and where they can be aggressive when the situation calls for it.
Absolutely. This is a game after, you know, he shut down Kemba Walker. I know Trey got to the line and his final stat line looks good. He went on a little run in that fourth quarter, but I thought Schroeder did an excellent job on him defensively. And I thought that this road trip was from a long-term sense, one of the most productive things that happened on the 7-game road trip was I think Schroeder is getting more and more comfortable. Remember when it started, right? We were talking like, hey, is he going to be able to get involved in the offense? Like, should he go to the bench? And I'm not saying that conversation's over by any means.
Yeah.
But from the second half of the Philly game on, the Detroit game was bad for everybody, so let's throw that in the trash. But each game from there on out, like, his defense was fantastic, and he's starting to find more and more where his offensive opportunities are coming from. He's attacked a little bit more with his speed, especially in transition. So him getting that comfort level, and then defensively, Anthony, he gets so low. I love his defensive stance. I love how he picks up. He really controls the ground game, right? And against a guy like Trey, who's also small, who doesn't, you know, he's not much of a threat like above the rim or anything like that. A guy who can control the ground game, same as he did against Kemba. Schroeder just has provided so much on the defensive end. And it's funny, Anthony, because coming into this season, it was like my thoughts were, I watched tape on him and I was like, oh, he's a better defender than I thought he would be. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a little more than 25% into this season, I'm like, this is a guy who's going to be an amazing defender pretty much every night. And then it's his offense that I have questions about, which is kind of the opposite of how I started this season. So that's one of the fun things about watching a player on a day-to-day basis is this guy, especially in context with our other guards and our big men defenders behind, and that includes LeBron, right? Any help defenders, just really another defensive weapon on top of all of the other defensive weapons we have. We have the number one defensive rating in the NBA by a pretty wide margin. And I don't think we've come close to hitting our ceiling on the defensive end, and Schroeder's a big part of that.
This is a very good Atlanta offense that they held to 99 points.
Yeah.
At the end of a road trip too, by the way.
They did it to Boston too, right? Yeah. The last two games of a road trip, neither team, both in the playoffs right now, in the standings, neither team scored 100 points on their own home floor.
Yep. All right, let's take a quick second here. When we come back, let's talk Anthony Davis starting to kind of round into shape, form. Round into shape. That's more of a Luka Doncic thing. Anthony Davis is starting to look like Anthony Davis. Let's talk really quick about Locked On NBA's Tuesday editions. East meets West in Locked On NBA Tuesdays. Wes Goldberg, Warriors beat writer for the Mercury News and host of Locked On Warriors, and David Rammel, who you've heard on the show, host of Locked On Heat, tackle the biggest NBA stories of the day, coast to coast. Subscribe to Locked On NBA Podcast wherever you get podcasts. Today's show is also brought to you in part by betonline.ag. Use that promo code LOCKEDON for a 50% deposit bonus whenever you do introduce yourself to this website. I myself made a little bit of money parlaying the Lakers covering with the Hornets covering in Miami. That was a nice little payout. But today's bet of the day is going to be the Portland Trailblazers being favored by only a point and a half against the Washington Wizards. Now, the Wizards are playing a little bit better, and the Wizards are at, or no, the Blazers are actually getting a point and a half against the Washington Wizards. And, you know, the Blazers are in a world of hurt. Wizards are playing some of their better basketball, but I think the Blazers are still equipped to give the Wizards a hard time. So go ahead and you're talking about so few points, and you're getting enough here to be able to mess around a little bit. And the money line is plus 105 on the Blazers. That's what I would maybe take a look at, a little longer look at. If you are going to join me on this one, you can do so at betonline.ag. If you're going to fade me on this one, you can do so at betonline.ag. Use that promo code LOCKEDON for a 50% deposit bonus. If you are going to do any gambling, though, please do so responsibly. All right, so it was, do you follow that account, NBA Math, on there, on Twitter? Do you ever see, like, their graphs that they show up with, like, the faces of all the
mm-hmm. Yeah, with the, that's what that is that's BPM represented mm-hmm. graphically.
So I was kind of surprised. They put out their most recent graph of where everybody sits to this point. Nikola Jokic is really far out there. LeBron, I think, is having the second best season according to that. And then there's kind of a jumble, obviously, because you're talking about so many players. And AD was way higher on that thing than I thought he would be, you know. And I think on one hand you say, well, he's so talented, he's going to get his numbers anyway. But on the other hand, I think it's just as easy to say, like, no, actually, I think I was kind of taking him for granted a little bit, right? Especially defensively. We saw what the defense looked like when Anthony Davis wasn't out there against Detroit, right? And so, you know, you add that, you know, as context to this. And then you start to see him also start to get his legs under him or start to commit more to getting himself better looks. I thought his floater game in this one was fantastic. You know, I thought he had one of those dunks that we saw pretty often last year. Haven't seen it much this year, where he rolls baseline, gets that bounce pass from LeBron, you know, takes his like one dribble and then really hits the launch pad. And Danilo Gallinari was the one who was supposed to be rotating over. And it was with such authority that Gallinari, who granted is not the kind of player who's going to go out and challenge anybody anyway, but he really made like a conscious business decision. Like, no, hell no, I'm not. There's no benefit to getting into the picture here. And I'm kind of curious, Pete, if you're seeing some of the same stuff I am, or if you think I was too low on him in the first place, or both. It's probably a combination of both.
I mean, yeah, I think that it's easy to overlook the context, and we've said so many times that it becomes kind of this background and we kind of tune it out, the quick turnaround and all of that, but there's a real human toll on that. And I think AD's been in kind of a funk anyway, but yeah, seeing him get his legs under him and attack mm-hmm. the basket. I loved in the Boston game, he started that game out, got a bunch of rebounds in that first half and was like, I'm going to dominate around the basket. And mm-hmm. that's something that he's been shooting mostly jumpers, and he did that a lot in this game. And then he posted up and then they doubled him a ton, just as Boston did. But him putting a little more force going toward the basket is really helpful and changes, because Mark doesn't provide any of that, right? That's not Dwight. That's not JaVale. It's a different type of center. And so when AD's not putting that pressure on the front of the rim, it changes our offense. I actually still don't think he's doing that enough, but where his legs coming underneath him is particularly important, I think, is on the defensive end. So that's something where, that's somewhere where we don't have any other defender like him. I mean, nobody does, right? But even stylistically, he's so essential to our defense that when he is really spry at three blocks tonight, a steal, had a couple of deflections, great closeouts. I've seen a lot of threes that I always crack up when he gets switched onto a guy or when it closes out to a perimeter shooter. They got to put that little extra arc on it. And sometimes it's that like duck falling from the sky type thing. And it's a barely grazes off of the rim, or it's an air ball wide left, because you got to avoid Anthony Davis. He's just such a dynamic.
Trae Young.
Yeah, absolutely.
Trae Young's like one of the better shooters in the NBA, guarded by anybody.
And great at creating space, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, seeing AD become more and more, he's not all the way back for sure, in my opinion, but last two games, really strong performances for him. And a big part of the reason why we've held those two teams under 100.
I've said that when the Lakers look their most impressive, it's in those games that AD is fully engaged and fully committed on both ends of the court. And it's not even just like a, you know, like, yes, it's easy to point to the way he shot in this one and say, well, he shot 10 of 14. He's not going to do that every night. It's not about that. It's I don't care if he shoots, I would prefer he doesn't, but I don't care if he shoots 2 of 14, if he gets the kind of shots that he was getting in this one, right? Because even on the misses that he's going to have, if he attacks the basket the way that he does, he's going to have the defense at such a weakened position that it makes it almost impossible to get out and run, right? Which allows you to be a better defense whenever you do get back there. And then when he does get back there and he's defending the way that he does, yes, he only had 2 rebounds in this one, but that's a stat that I could literally care less about. Would I prefer he gets more? Sure. But I actually think of all the players that, you know, when the Lakers do secure a rebound, he's the one who, like, when he gets a rebound, unless it's a long one, actually kind of puts the Lakers at a comparative disadvantage compared to like when Gasol gets a rebound or when LeBron gets a rebound or you know, let alone when a guard gets a rebound. When AD gets a rebound, it means he's not running up the court and he doesn't have that release valve that LeBron can hit for an easy bucket on the other end. So the 2 rebounds, I don't really necessarily care about all that much. The 3 blocks though, yep, I like that. The steals that he, the steal that he had, the deflections, and then just, and I thought he didn't play a perfect game. I thought he was put in kind of a tough situation because of the 4 fouls. I thought, you know, once he picked up his 4th foul, he really didn't want to challenge Trae Young at the rim because Young was getting such, you know, he was getting a Trae Young in Atlanta type whistle. And so, you know, Young got some easier looks at the rim that he might not normally get. But overall, though, the fact that AD once again anchored a Lakers defense that held a very good offense to well below its averages, like that's what you're looking for. And then add that to the fact of how he was aggressive on the other end. And like this is all we've been asking to see on a more regular basis. Maybe his legs weren't quite ready at the beginning of the year. Maybe his head wasn't. Look, I know I'm speaking for the both of us when I say neither you or I were ready for the season to start. So it wouldn't shock me at all if AD also wasn't ready. And now that you're starting to see him kind of get his legs under him and get his head right, this is where, you know, the Lakers might be hitting, you know, one of the next chapter in this season, which is a really fun thing to think about.
100%, man. Like, look, we can talk about scheme. We can talk about lineups. There is one Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis is one of one. Yep. And if Anthony Davis is not the regular Anthony Davis and is a diminished version of him, your team will suffer as a result of that, right? We're still 16-6, despite not getting the best version of him for most of this season. So it speaks to how good this team is that we've gotten kind of diet AD and we're right up there, right near the top of the NBA. And if that guy starts rounding into form, it's just a different version of the team in a way that there's nothing Vogel can do. There's nothing anybody can do. It's AD, right? Yeah. We need AD to be AD, and yeah, other things will definitely fall into place.
Absolutely. All right, let's take one more second here. When we come back, instead of sounding so accusatory in having this conversation about Alex Caruso, I want to instead kind of try to highlight what it is that he does that makes him it's an immediately impactful player. He comes into the game and immediately does stuff that helps you win basketball games. So in a second, Pete and I are going to try to best explain that in this, albeit audio form. Get more of the sports news you need in less time with our new Locked On Today podcast. Peter Bukowski hosts Locked On Today in a daily podcast, breaking down the biggest news stories with analysis from our local experts. Start your day with all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to Locked On Today wherever you get podcasts. Today's show is brought to you in part by Rock Auto. head on over to rockauto.com, where you will visit a family business that has been doing this for over two decades now, and you are going to find the best collection of parts that you can possibly find on the internet. It is getting insane. The more high-tech these cars get, the more difficult it is to find the proper part, and that makes it all the easier for the big companies to mark up all of the parts that you might need should anything go wrong with your car. Well, rockauto.com is here to help you avoid all of those kinds of messes as best you can. They have everything from engine control modules to brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil. Your car needs carpet? They have that too. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand, specs, and prices you prefer. And most importantly, the prices you see are going to be the same for everybody, regardless of your driving background. So again, head on over to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or your truck, and then write "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. Pete, why should Alex Caruso be starting?
I mean...
All right, so let's...
You wouldn't have to twist my arm. Yeah, you wouldn't have to twist my arm too hard, man.
My arm's twisted already. Like, I'm twisting my own arm is what I'm saying here. But let's look at it this way, though. Why is it? Because the Laker players are already talking about it too, right? It's a conversation piece inside the locker room. Alex Caruso's net rating stuff, his plus minus stuff, like his statistical impact, those stats that you look at when you're trying to find, you know, how impactful different players are. And it's tough. Like none of these are perfect stats, by the way. You know, what I look for, and it's like I say all the time, find me the highest player and the lowest player. And if I can explain why those situations are as they are, then I think that's when plus minus is kind of serving its purpose. But when you have this large a sample size, and we're now years into his career now, where he is consistently this impactful, Pete, why is that happening?
Oh man, that could be a very long answer, but
yeah, we're going to be here for 3 hours.
I would also say that it's not just a matter of like, oh, he led the team in plus minus, which he did for the fourth straight game tonight, Anthony. Four mm-hmm. straight games leading the team in plus minus. But even if you're not looking at the box score and you're just watching the game, and I don't think you have to be a coach or a particularly knowledgeable or sophisticated about basketball to be like, mm-hmm. that guy kicks ass. That was a great play he just made.
Yeah.
He made a play that we probably had the game wrapped up anyway at that point, but he comes flying in for the offensive rebound, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that seals the game. LeBron shoots two free throws as a result of it. He had a tap out against Philly that led to a Schroeder three, right? And so those little things plays are huge. But one thing that I don't think he gets enough credit for is I think he's one of the best players in the NBA at staying mentally engaged at all times.
Yes,
one of the things I love, absolutely. And there's so it's so easy to miss this live, but I would encourage people to watch when something happens, like a significant play, good or bad, look over at the bench and see if Alex Caruso is not in the game. If he's on the bench, he's involved in like mentally Always. Involved in every play. And he's like living and dying with every single play. It's yeah. great.
Dude just loves basketball.
Right. And he's super engaged. Now, that's not enough. I'm super engaged. And I mean, you know.
Yeah.
And so
I'm super married, but yeah.
There's. You know. So how I have this thing that I want to do. This is a bucket list basketball item for me to be able to illustrate all of the like options on every part of every type of play. Right. Mm-hmm. And so So Alex Caruso understands how basketball is supposed to be played, right? Gosh, this sounds so cliche, and I wish I could be more specific. It's hard to do on a podcast, but like
it
if it comes to top locking a shooter in the corner, right? Or defending a player in the post who's bigger than you and beating him to their spot. He's great on his closeouts. Like, so there's a shooter, you chase the guy off the line, you know, you chop your feet, you get your hands high. If they attack the closeout, he can, so he closes out hard, they attack him, he can slide his feet and beat them to the spot. There's so few guys who can do that on defense. And so it's a combination of his mental engagement, because all of these things happen very fast, right? There's probably a dozen different things, and that's low. That's probably a couple of dozen things that happen on every single play that, depending on how those two players or this collection of players interact with it, it can create an advantage or it can be shut down by a defense. And so he understands all of those decisions, what you're supposed to do in that situation, and can mentally apply it. And he's a really good athlete. And so all of that combined with being mentally engaged all of the time, that shows up the most on the defensive end, but even on offense, right? He understands when to cut from the weak side. Like if you're on the left side wing and you're facing a zone defense, that guy in the weak side corner, flash middle, you see, we had a little,
he's involved.
He's involved in a lot of our combo plays. I'm sorry, I'm going to try to not rant about this for 5 minutes, but he's involved in a lot of like our combo hockey assist type of plays. There was a play against, I think it was Boston, where he flashed middle and it just barely touched his hands. He swung it over to Trez in the dunker spot, and Trez is great on those floaters. But it was just a bam, bam type of pass, right? And those, he's similar to LeBron in the respect that the ball will barely touch his hands on a swing pass, and he sees the game a step or two ahead. LeBron's on a different level than anybody else, but AC has that processing ability, knowing even like when he's making that flash cut, he knew if I'm going to make this flash cut middle, this is where the help guy is going to come from. It's going to come off of Trez. And because it comes off of Trez, I'm going to move the ball over to Trez. And while that defender is taking a step toward me, because I flashed middle, the ball's already out of my hands and it's to Trez. And now Trez is great at this shot. That's 8 to 10 feet away. This little floater, he knocks it down. You multiply that, that's one possession, man. That's one possession. You do that over a 48-minute game, or in his case, you know, the 16 minutes he gets or the 20 minutes that he gets.
Yeah.
That's why he's always one of our leaders in plus minus, because he does things that really help you win games.
Caruso played 25 minutes. So shouts to Vogel for giving Caruso the 25 minutes that he had tonight. I would add to the point that you made about his flashing. I really enjoy watching him actually make that flash cut, because on his way there, like he's obviously got an eye out for the ball, because if that pass is coming in and you're flashing to the free throw line and the ball is anywhere near the top of the key, right, that ball is going to be coming in quickly. So he obviously has one eye out for the ball, but as he's making that cut, watch his head, and he's watching to see, like, is anybody reacting to me making this cut?
Such a great point, because that's where the ball's going to go next, right?
Yeah, right. Because if I'm making this cut and I'm bringing that middle defender over, okay, cool. I'm going to look over there, right? If I'm making this cut and I see this guard sinking down and he's going to pin down and he's going to guard me at the free throw line, okay, cool. I'm going to look opposite to the guard that is now open. And I love watching him make that read, because, you know, part of it is you do a lot of this in film study, but then there's just no... There's no way you can make up for the fact that if you're doing your work before you catch the ball, then there's no way the defense can react to it. There's nothing they can do.
So he's the only player, NBA player, that I've gotten to talk to one-on-one in a reporter setting, even with the Lakers, right? We've been in the pandemic, so I haven't been around them. We haven't, the support staff hasn't really been around them, only the people that really need to be, right? And so AC remains the only NBA player I've had a basketball conversation with over the course of like 10 minutes. And it was when he had just come up from the G League, and I got, and this is right, like I'm a stinky blogger, and so I'm not gonna get 5 minutes with BI or Lonzo or anybody like that at the time.
BI but actually AC came on the show for 7 minutes, so take that.
Did he really?
I got BI to laugh one time.
Oh wow,
that's, I did, yeah, it's like it's on, it's like the impressive top line of my resume.
So yeah, yes, so AC's sitting under this stanchion, and I had already like, hey, this guy's really, I really like this guy. And we'd seen him at Summer League. He was a ton of fun. And so I asked, and they were like, sure, sure. And so he came over and we talked. And the thing, one of the things he said, it's up on YouTube if you ever want to check it out. Me talking to AC in 2017 or so, 2018. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about, I asked him a question about playing point guard or in general. And he was talking about how he will take pictures, right? And like, mm-hmm. he'll glance at certain yeah. things. And it's a snapshot of that moment in time. This guy's there. My teammate's over here. And most of the time you're reading the defense, because if you're a knowledgeable NBA player, you know where your teammates
are. You know where your teammate's going to be. Yeah. Right.
So it's a matter of what defensive coverage are they in? And then applying that, like understanding that, where's the help coming from? And then applying that in real time. And this happens so fast. I can't emphasize that enough. And, but that, when you were talking there, that was the thing that stood out to me, is that AC making that flash cut and taking the little snapshots that he was yep. telling me about, right? Like, look this way. Okay, this is over there. Look over there. And so it's, yeah, just these little screenshots one after another. And that's how he's able to process the game. He processes the game faster than most players do.
Yeah. And then defensively, the thing that I kind of watch for, and I would say, like, if you guys want to understand the impact that AC is having and why he's so immediately impactful, just don't watch the ball. Don't watch the ball when the other team has it. Watch AC on defense and look at how many, like, one of my favorite things to watch, especially from a guard spot, is how many diagonal passes are you making them hesitate on, right? Let alone stealing it, right? Because he had that steal when Danilo caught it. He shot the gap there, got the steal from Danilo, and had that big dunk. I think got the Lakers up to, I think it made, I think they opened up the fourth quarter on a 13-0 run, and that was the 12th and 13th point. Yeah. And so, like, there, those are the ones that are very easy to see. But when a defense is forced, or when a defense forces an offense to have to go immediately to plan B and to plan C and to plan D, that's gumming up the defense or the offense in some ways that it makes it really difficult to get a decent shot off in a 24-second shot clock, which, by the way, you usually only have 17 seconds or so, 16, 17 seconds or so to work with. So if you're forcing that offense to not even consider plan A of a set, you're really doing your job. You're making their job, their lives miserable there. And one of the things that I really enjoy watching Caruso, now it depends on who he's guarding. He couldn't do it as much tonight because he's guarding Trae Young, right? If he, and this is another thing that he understands, though, is that
understanding, like, personnel. Yes.
Yes. It's not, you know, on some nights you can go out there and play free safety and really force the offense into some stickier situations. But on other nights, when you're guarding Trae Young, if you're guarding Steph Curry, if you're guarding Damian Lillard, like, you can't do those things. You really got to focus at all times on making that player's life miserable, because that's the best way to impact the offense in those games. And just like identifying all these things at any given time during the game. And I thought the point that you make about him being perpetually engaged, whether he's on or off the court, it's just something that, you know, not all players have. And he does have that, and he uses that every time he steps onto the court. Now, this is the case. And Frank Vogel has actually talked about this, that he's concerned that if he plays Caruso too long of minutes, it takes a lot of energy to be that engaged at all times. And if you extend him from 25 minutes to 32 minutes or to 35 minutes, that engagedness, we're not talking about production. We're talking about engagedness. His impact might start to dissipate a little bit, right? It's and my counterpoint would be like, can we actually see it before you actually before you take that for granted? But still, like, it's a perfectly viable and fair point that Vogel is making there, and it is difficult to play as hard as Caruso does, both mentally and physically, for as long as Laker fans want him out there on the court. I just like to see it before we get to that point of wondering why. Last thing on Caruso that I'm kind of curious about. So he's shooting the ball really, really well. Like, he's regressing a little bit. We're seeing some regression there from Caruso.
I mean, of course, he's not going to shoot 55%.
He's not going to have the greatest season in the history of shooting. He's not that kind of a shooter. But Do you think, given the way he was shooting to start this year, and maybe that is, we know that that isn't the kind of shooter he is anyway, but do you think he should ever start to look for more three? Because he's reached the point, he had a couple shots tonight that he kind of looked off of. He allowed himself to be run off the 3-point line. Has he turned into the kind of shooter where you would say, unless they're really out on you as soon as you catch it, you got to be ready to pull the trigger? Or do you think just kind of letting the game come to him more and become whatever shooter he becomes is more of the route to take here?
He's a let the game come to you type of shooter. He's not. There's some element of shooting, I believe at least, that's natural, right? And one of the things about AC, of all of the praise we've given him in this segment, on top of that, is he's developed his skills. His skills are, he's always had this kind of high IQ, high motor type of game that we've all really loved. But he had that nice little drive, right? Like you said, in that run that we made, where he hit that little floater, and he's gotten better at that shot. He's made that a couple of times. He's hit those threes and in a way where he can relocate now. But these are not, you're not sending AC off of a stagger screen to come let it fly. He's not a KCP type of shooter. He's not even a Kyle Kuzma type of shooter, right? Even though percentages are significantly different, the types of shots that AC can get up, but that's okay. He needs to be a good spot up shooter. These are catch and shoot with your feet set, or relocate from the corner to the wing to the corner, all of these spot up shooter type of actions. If he can do that, and he's a high 30s type of guy, that's one of the best 3-and-D guys in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And it's not a matter of I don't want him passing up open shots, but depending on where we are in the shot clock. And that's something too, right? Where one of the things I notice and like about him is some of those threes that he passes up, which you are right about, most of the time that's with 15 seconds left on the shot clock, right? Mm-hmm. And is a mildly or is a decently contested three from AC at that point the best shot? No, we could probably get a better shot in those last 15 seconds. And so he's going to work at it. But he knows the shot clock, if we're in that last 8 seconds of the clock or something like that, he's going to shoot that shot. So I'm happy with his shot selection on threes, and he's really grown in terms of his skill set.
Yeah, I would say in terms of, I agree with you. So I'm not, there's nothing I really have to add to that aspect of it, but you know, over the next year or a couple of years, because his developmental years are pretty close to behind him at this point. You can still get better at certain things, but in terms of like taking significant steps forward, you know, it's kind of hard. Although LeBron is changing
this past year too, right?
LeBron's going to be 55 and he's going to be still adding to his game for somehow. Exactly. But Alex Caruso, like the next thing that I'm kind of looking for, he still has a preferred way to step into his threes, right? He's a left-right shooter. He doesn't even like shooting right-left. He doesn't really like hopping into his threes. He's a left-right shooter, specifically from the left corner, where he can kind of swing towards the basket, right? That's kind of when his shot looks the best. And, you know, over the next couple of years or so, I would like to see him become more comfortable becoming a right-left shooter or hopping into his jumper and stuff like that. Small little things. And the nice thing about footwork is it's really easy to just kind of work on your own. And we've seen him, because of the additions he's made to his game to this point, this is the kind of thing that it would surprise me if he didn't add that stuff to his, you know, that aspect to his shooting ability.
Absolutely. And even now, man, I think you can make a good case. He's the third best player on this team.
Oh yeah.
And like you said,
I have.
I want to see it that like 25 minutes. And I don't know what he played in the Boston game, but he got more minutes than he had. I mean, he's in a similar class in terms of type of player to Draymond, to Marcus Smart, to these guys that are immeasurably valuable in connecting parts of the game that, while not scoring a ton of points, right, but they're really brilliant, great defenders. And so that, alongside LeBron James and Anthony Davis, man, it's part of why, like, when Vogel had to show his hand, the one time where he really needed to go to win the game, that game six, right? Like, hey, we're cutting all the BS. He was Dwight out, Alex Caruso in, blowout victory up by 30 in the first half. And so I would love to see that in a, maybe not as a starter, although again, wouldn't have to twist my arm, but give him 25 minutes a game like he did tonight. I'd be a happy man.
Absolutely. All right. I'm a happy camper. This is one of my favorite wins of the season to this point. It wasn't it wasn't a blowout. It wasn't a win over the Milwaukee Bucks, or although the win over the Bucks was a nice one, and it wasn't a win over the Clippers or anything like that. It's just those, and it's not even a win, by the way, that we'll even look back on after the season and really remember. But to this point in the season, this had all the makings of one of those annoying schedule losses that you and I would hop on here and be crabby about after the fact. But no, it's a fun one. They cover, which helps your boy a little bit. And we get to move on to, you know, a couple days off and then face off against a really good and a really good Denver team that's playing well as well on top of that. So fun stuff ahead. That's going to do it though for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Thank you guys very much for tuning in. Pete and I will be back tomorrow to get you guys ready for that Denver game and maybe answer a couple more of those iTunes questions, since we have a few more of those to get to as well. Until then, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.